The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
It is Back to the Future Day, hence the introduction music. TJ, happy Back to the Future Day, and happy Spittoon Week to you.
Yes, yes, happy Spittoon Week to you as well. Doesn't always feel like, well, it feels like a rivalry about as much as the Colts-Patriots does. You know, occasionally you have to beat them for them to consider you a rival, but hopefully sometime soon IU can get back to making this a legitimate rivalry.
Yeah, they've played every year, or not every year, but they've played for the Spittoon since 1950. IU has only won it 12 times. Before the Spittoon, IU was 3-0-1 against Michigan State. So you wish that they would have played for the Spittoon before that. But anyway, we're upbeat. It's another college football Saturday. I have put the Rutgers loss behind me after watching the Colts on Sunday night run that cockamamie fake punt. Bad things happen. So anyway, TJ, let's dive into Michigan State. They're ranked, I believe, fifth in one poll, seven in the other. And they have a very stout team. They're in play after last week's craziness, still for the Big Ten East Championship. I didn't read the article, but apparently there is some kind of crazy tiebreaker for the Big Ten East if it ends up that way. So Michigan State has a lot to play for against Indiana this week.
Yeah, they absolutely do have a lot to play for. Like you said, they're still in the running for a Big Ten East title. They are still in the running for a college football playoff spot. I know that their marquee win, or what they planned on being their marquee win, the non-conference against Oregon, does not look near as impressive now as we thought it would. But still, you know, that showed the committee that they were ambitious about scheduling. I think they'll get rewarded points for that if they're able to stay in the race for a playoff spot. You know, you have to figure that the Big Ten is going to get one team into that playoff based on what it's looking like right now. So Michigan State, you know, and Ohio State, and I guess you could say Michigan, if things completely go haywire, you could have a two-loss Michigan team maybe sneak in there. But, you know, so Michigan State is vying to be one of those four teams in that college football playoff. Their first goal, of course, is going to be to win the Big Ten East, and to do that, they need to avoid slipping up against IU. They're not the only team with a lot to play for, though. You know, the Hoosiers have lost three in a row. We are all aware of what has kind of transpired over these last 3 weeks. It's been three very different games. You know, Ohio State, they lost, but you felt good about things. Penn State, they lost, but you said, well, it was ugly, but, you know, a ton of injuries, and that's going to happen when you have a ton of injuries and don't play all that well. And then Rutgers, you know, we've said all that we can and thought all that we want to about that one. So, IU needs to, at the very least, they need to go out, put together a solid, I would really like to see a consistent performance. What we've seen so far this year has been every game has featured quarters where IU has looked really, really good. Every game has also featured at least a quarter where IU has looked really bad, and then it's featured some mediocre play in between those spurts of good and bad. So, and a lot of teams are like that. IU's not unique in that, but I feel like Indiana's a bit more, I guess you could say, bipolar than most. And I would really like to see them put together a solid, consistent 60 minutes. I certainly am not expecting a victory, but I think it's going to be very interesting to see, and we talked about this on Monday, to see how this team mentally gets themselves into it this week in practice. We're not going to see that, but we will see the results of this week's practice on the field on Saturday. If they come out and lay a total egg, I think it's safe to say that, you know, last Saturday was a crippling mental thing for this team, and they're going to really struggle the rest of the season to produce anything looking like a good team. But if they can go out on Saturday, be competitive, show good effort, show good fight, you know, I can throw in some more cliches, Chuck Briano style, grit, character, all that type of stuff. But everybody knows what I'm talking about. If they can put together a solid 60 minutes, I'll feel a lot better about them moving forward. But both teams with a lot to play for, and then, of course, like you said, the old brass platoon. You know, I don't know if Michigan State regards that with any type of acclaim, but it would be really, really nice to capture a trophy back and have two in the trophy case at the same time.
Yeah, the Michigan State does keep it in a trophy case. It's behind a glass lock thing, so they do treasure it, I guess, if that means anything. But we're also going to bring in Nick Holmes here in a few minutes, or right now, to go over some numbers. Nick does our weekly Numbers That Matter piece. They're always great. And numbers are the name of the game, besides just the numbers in the score column at the end of the game. Nick, what are some numbers that have stood out to you for this matchup this week?
There's quite a few, but I think the first one that stood out to me more than any other, and we alluded to this on Monday evening, and I actually was wrong about the outcome against Purdue, but they beat Purdue by just 3 points, followed that up with a 7-point win over Rutgers, and then, you know, by the grace of the Almighty, they only won by 4 over the Wolverines. So right now, their average win margin in the Big Ten is just 4.67 points per game. And then if you factor in their only other game against a Power 5 opponent, Oregon, they only beat them by 3 points. So it's not like they're beating their opponents into submission. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't come into this game looking to prove a point. Maybe they realize there's some doubters out there. They're looking to flex their muscles maybe. But that's the very first thing that stood out to me. Yeah, they're 7-0, but when they're playing quality opponents, they're not beating them down.
Well, yeah, they didn't really beat down any of their non-conference foes. They were outgained heading into that Michigan game. They were outgained in 3 of their 6 contests yardage-wise, and a couple of those were not particularly close. I mean, they were outgained by a significant margin in a couple of those wins, which, you know, speaks to their resourcefulness to find a way to get a win when perhaps they haven't played their best. But it also does speak to some vulnerability that, you know, they are 7-0, they're a top 10 team, they deserve that ranking, they've earned it. But, you know, this has not been some unstoppable juggernaut that has, like you said, that's been obliterating their opponents. They really haven't done that all season. And that kind of stood out to me when I was studying the Spartans for that game against Michigan, was that the numbers really don't speak too kindly for them. And that's why in kind of the advanced stats, S&P Plus or the Football Outsiders, they are not considered a top 10 team in those advanced stats rankings, mainly due to their underlying yardage numbers that they really haven't been too impressive there.
Yeah, and they are dealing with some injuries. That's a caveat. They are missing one of their best linebackers, and they've been missing some linemen. I think both Jack Conklin and Jack Allen have been missing time. TJ, do you know if they're going to be back this week?
that is up in the air. I believe that they're expecting Jack Conklin to be back. They have not released anything this week about whether or not they're practicing. Much like Indiana, they are pretty tight-lipped about injuries, understandably so. But, yeah, both of the Jacks, Allen and Conklin, have both missed time. And that, you know, to put that into context for Indiana fans, that would be similar to Spriggs and Dan Feeney missing time for Indiana. So, you know, the depth on the O-line might be slightly better for Michigan State than it is for IU, but, you know, those are two big losses that have impacted their offense. It's a fair point to consider.
Oh, yeah, and it just looks like this Michigan State team just isn't as good, even though they have Connor Cook. It's kind of, you know, the opposite. I was rewatching the first half of the Oregon game last week, and both teams scored, I believe, on their opening drives, and they had Michigan State went 70-something yards in three plays, and Oregon went 70-something yards in 13 plays. But when you think about these two programs, it's normally the other way around. So this might not be the Michigan State team of yesteryear, but they're still a very good team. Connor Cook is scary efficient. He's completed 116 of 202 passes for just over 1,600 yards, 13 touchdowns to 2 interceptions ratio. So he's the guy that Indiana has to shut down. They have some excellent receivers. Aaron Burbridge is having a terrific year, 702 receiving yards and 4 touchdowns. Josiah Price, who killed IU last year, is an Indiana kid, is another weapon. Majerick Kings is another weapon. But their run game isn't as good as it used to be. So it's kind of a different feel to this Michigan State team, if I I'll put that out there like that.
Yeah, you're spot on about Burbridge. That was another thing that I had picked up on. He's had 5 games where he's went over 100 yards receiving. So Fant and company will definitely have their hands full. And granted, he's not nearly as explosive as Carew, as Carew is. And had scored 6 touchdowns over his last 2 games, but he's definitely one of Cook's favorite targets. And you alluded to the rushing attack of Michigan State not being quite where it had been in yesteryear. Right now they're averaging 157 yards on the ground per game, a little over 4 yards per rush. That's 84th best in the nation yards per game at 157 for comparison's sake. I use it 195, just around 4.2 yards per carry, and they're 40th in the nation. So yards per carry is pretty similar, but like you said, they don't seem to be relying on the run game. TJ, you had talked about this team's resourcefulness, and I think it's more than anything, just they don't shoot themselves in the foot. They've only turned the ball over 3 times this year so far, which is 4th best in the nation. And then as far as penalties, they've only been penalized 37 yards per game, which is 8th best in the nation. So right there, that just shows you that, you know, this is a disciplined team that, you know, maybe not as explosive or as dominant, but like we said, in close games, they're not going to beat themselves.
That's a really good point. I'll throw in something on Aaron Burbridge. He's had more than twice the number of targets that anyone else on that team has. Garrett Kings is 2nd in targets, but it's definitely very clear that Aaron Burbridge is his go-to guy. 73 targets for Burbridge, Kings Jr. 2nd with 35. So that gives you a pretty clear indication. And I'll ask you guys this. I had some problems with the way that Indiana chose to attempt to cover Leonte Carew. I thought the Rashard Fant did a pretty good job when he was given the chance, but and you'll see some teams do this, some teams just have it schematically where they are not going to switch guys' sides of the field. They're going to stick Fant on one side and stick in this case, it was Andre Brown Jr. for most of the game. On the other side, they're not going to have a shadow receiver. I really thought that IU should have had Rashard Fant shadowing Leonte Carew, and they did a tad bit. It's not like they just stuck Fant on one side and stuck him there forever. But for the most part, they did not have Fant shadowing Leonte Carew. I thought it burned them. And I'm wondering if you guys are expecting or hoping to see Rashard Fant get the assignment of shadowing Aaron Burbridge, or if you think it'll be similar to what we saw last week in terms of scheme.
Hopefully, you know, they figure it out. I do agree with you that it was a mistake putting, you know, not switching Fant. If you're going to have a corner that leads the nation or leads the Big Ten in pass breakups, you got to use him. Otherwise, you're going to take him out of the game guarding some other guys. Like, who cares if he shut down Rutgers' number two receiver? It's not a big deal. The guy who's going to kill you, who you can't let beat you, was Leronte Carew. Now, you know, Aaron Burbridge is 6'1". He's a bigger receiver than Carew, I believe. He's 6'1", 208. And, you know, you have Majerick Kings, who's 5'10", 192. So you got to look at it as a physicality matchup as well. Is Burbridge going to beat up on Fant, who's a smaller, you know, thinner corner, or do you put Fant on Majerick Kings, who's 5'10", 192, and maybe create a matchup, advantage there for IU's defense? Or, you know, do you put your best guy on their best guy? You know, I don't know what they're going to do. They don't like to switch that field corner a lot. Nick probably has more knowledge on that than I do. What do you see from that, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a desire to keep Fant on the field side because his support against a run, I guess, historically hasn't been as strong as the other corners, but the last couple of weeks, he's gotten in there and he's laid some licks on some opposing offensive players. I guess that's just the biggest concern, though, is, you know, field side versus boundary side. Teams typically, on average, run to the boundary side more, and maybe they feel that Brown is better at support there. But yeah, I agree with you both. If Burbridge is having a day from that boundary side, you gotta flip it if you think that Fant can slow him down.
Well, I get my concern would be, one, I agree, Fant has improved his tackling quite a bit, in my opinion, especially the last probably three games, I would say. But number two, my concern would be, yes, Burbridge is 6'1". He's a bigger target, so you worry about Fant's size. But IU doesn't have a lot of options that I would say you'd be excited about putting on the field against him that do match up with him physically much better than Fant does. So it's Tyler Green. We saw him play a little bit. He's the type of guy that you hope evolves into somebody that could match up with a 6'1 receiver like Burbridge and, you know, be able to physically match up with him. But he's not at that point yet. He is progressing, but he's certainly not there yet. So who are you looking at that could do that? I don't really see a viable option outside of just sticking Fant on him and saying, yeah, we know that you're a bit physically undersized right now, but do your best against their best target and do your best to kind of limit him. You're not going to totally shut him down, but, you know, when you're targeted, do what you can to knock it down, which he has done better than most corners in the country. So I'm not – you guys have any thoughts on a guy that could be a better physical matchup than Fant, and would it be worth matching up better physically and taking away some of the matchup you might have in terms of skill?
You're right that Tyler Green is that guy who can be a guy who faces a bigger receiver. I think Green is 6'2 or 6'3, and, you know, what you want him to develop into is a kind of Antonio Cromartie guy as a bigger corner who's longer, who could jam receivers at that line of scrimmage and go up and make plays and get the ball. But, you know, they're freshmen, and secondary positions are tough to learn.
And maybe even doubling. You might have to double guys with Dutra and a combination of Jonathan Crawford, Tony Fields, and Jameel Cook. So, you know, don't be afraid to double guys. And you know, it's going to come back to that defensive line. You know, if they don't get pressure on Cook, and that's Cook's weakness, is when he gets under pressure, his fundamentals fall apart. And when his fundamentals fall apart, his accuracy goes down. And he'll throw interceptions. He'll throw balls in the dirt. He'll throw them high. So, you know, you could have Revis and Cromartie out there guarding these two guys. But if you don't get to Connor Cook, he's going to pick anybody apart, no matter who's guarding them. So I really think that it does shift more now towards the defensive line and these linebackers. And if you have to double one of these guys, if they're going for having a day, then double one of these guys.
Yeah, you make a really good point, Sammy, about getting to the quarterback. And you know, throughout the season, that's been an issue one week, and it's you know, looked better the next. And Michigan State is the only team in the Big Ten to allow fewer sacks per game than Indiana. Right now, they've allowed just 7 sacks all season through 7 games. IU's allowed 8 through 7. So that'll be an interesting matchup. The difference. You know, Michigan State is top 5 in getting to the quarterback. They average 3.43 sacks per game. IU's actually 44th. As we all know, a lot of those sacks came against Wake Forest. A few of them came against Penn State. So you would like to see a consistent effort out of that front four and, you know, not allow the quarterbacks to pick the young secondary apart. I mean, we've alluded to it all year, and at times they look great. Mangieri and Shaw have done a great job at it. Latham's done a really good job at collapsing the interior of the offensive line. So if there were ever a weekend that you're going to be up against a stout offensive line, this is it. I mean, during the summer I said this could probably be this team's toughest game because it's on the road. Against a top 10 team, but, you know, like we said, not all the numbers stack up in such a way that you would say, yeah, Michigan State's obviously the dominant team here, because I don't entirely buy that, so.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct, and there's some other guys on the defensive line that have to step up. You know, Ralph Green is somebody we've talked about all preseason that it could be a difference maker, and he's been almost invisible. At least on the stat sheet, and I know at nose guard it's kind of tough to make plays, but he's a guy that you need to get, you know, plug up the run and kind of, you're right, when you say collapse the line, you know, draw that double team to free up some linebackers and some of these guys coming off the edge.
The pass rush against Rutgers was – it was awful. It was non-existent. I was really disappointed. They got to him either the first or the second series. Jonathan Crawford got a sack, and they didn't get one the rest of the game, as far as I know. It was really disappointing to see, because Rutgers has a mediocre offensive line that Indiana failed to take advantage of. Now they're going against an elite offensive line, especially if the Allens are back, or if the Jacks are back, Conklin and Allen. If either one of those are back, the line just gets even better. So, you know, they're going to be challenged all week in practice, I'm sure, to produce better on Saturday. I think that individuals along that defensive line have played well, but it's going to have to be a game that they play really well as a group. And I do think that one of the things that they're going to have to do is, in order to help out, you know, their ability to get to the pass rusher and their ability to defend the pass, they're going to have to shut down the run, because Michigan State, as you guys said, does not have a typical Michigan State running game. They do have some capable running backs. They've got a couple of guys that, you know, I'd consider, I consider Madre London. I'd consider him good, I would say. They have Holmes, who is a bigger back. But overall, this is not a running back. There's not a running back on this roster that's going to strike fear into you like a Saquon Barkley from Penn State, or an Ezekiel Elliott, or even a Paul Martin, or, you know, or James from Rutgers. So I, I think that there's an opportunity here for Indiana if they can avoid giving up those big runs that are brought about by busted assignments. Usually not busted tackles, but busted assignments are what's hurting them in the run game. They've done a really good job of keeping people to, usually keeping them to like 1 or 2 yard gains. They just have to cut out those big 20 to 30 yard runs that are hurting them right now that are coming about from either it's mental mistakes when the play starts or it's mental mistakes when they line up. They're just getting in a slightly wrong position and the opposing running back is just hitting that hole and making them pay. It's usually not missed tackles that are causing that. So if they can stop that, cut those big runs out, and hold Michigan State to under 4 yards to carry, I think you'll feel good about your ability to then pursue the pass, which, you know, Michigan State is probably going to aim to have Connor Cook throw somewhere between, I think they'd like to have him throw in like the low to mid-30s attempts-wise. He threw it 39 times against Michigan. I think that's a bit more than they'd like. But Michigan, obviously, a very stout run defense. And Connor Cook has only thrown for 300 yards or more two times this season. So, and that's come in the past 2 weeks. So he's finding his rhythm. He's played very, I'd say, very smart football for the most part. He's taken care of the ball extremely well, but he hasn't exploded for big yards yet. So the potential is there for this defense of IU to rebound a little bit if they can do the things we talked about, pressure the passer a little bit, get into space, force him to throw off of some, you know, some happy feet, not set his feet. If they can contain Aaron Burbridge, force somebody else to beat them, and if they can just limit the running game, don't let that Michigan State running game get on track, then you'll feel pretty good about holding this Michigan State offense. I don't know. I think the target number is probably 35. Is that fair?
The passes?
No, 35. Points 35 or under. I think you feel pretty good about your defensive effort.
Yeah, if you keep them to 35 and they're not, you know, silly points, it's not like, you know, guys
right.
– Like, as long as you don't mess up, I think 35 points is a good goal. It's just over IU's average. IU's averaging giving up 34.1 points per game. You're probably if you hold them to 35, I'd like to see it less. I think if you hold them under 35, you have a good chance of winning. It's uh-huh. very tough to score on this Michigan State defense. So, you know, 35 would be a decent performance, but I think in order to win, you might need to hold them to 28 or less.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. We've not really shown – well, I mean, we've not really had an opportunity to show outside of the Wake Forest game what we can do with a full arsenal with hopefully a completely healthy Nate Sudfeld, and it still remains to be seen what Jordan Howard's going to look like this weekend. Fingers crossed that he'll be able to play. It would be nice to, you know, like we had alluded to on Monday, to have that 1-2 punch of, you know, ground and pound with Howard, and he's not 3 yards in a cloud of dust running back. Don't get me wrong there, but then you have your lightning with Mike Majet. So it'd be interesting to see if how much that would come into play on Saturday if you could, I think slow the game down a little bit and allow your defense a little bit of extra rest. Speaking of the defense, I think the last couple of weeks it's been pretty rough on third down for the group, and Michigan State comes in as one of the top third down conversion teams in the nation. They're 16th right now, converting nearly 47% of their attempts on third down, and IU's 86th in the nation at stopping third down attempts. So opponents are converting over 41% of their third down conversions. Hopefully I didn't totally bog you guys down in numbers where you couldn't follow that at all. But long story short, this defense has to get off the field when it has an opportunity to.
Yeah, I'll throw in the IU offense has to do a better job on third down as well. It's been miserable mm-hmm. the past 3 weeks, really. The last good third down performance they had was against Wake Forest. They started the season pretty well on third down conversions, but it has been really bad, and it was awful against Rutgers. Multiple third and shorts that they were unable to pick up. We talked about it on Monday's show, some ways that, you know, they could improve on third and short, and they just, I mean, they have to. They can't afford to, number one, let Penn State convert over half their third downs, and number two, IU's offense has got to stay on the field and convert on third down. If they convert at like a 35% clip, they're going to lose on Saturday, and it probably won't be a close game.
Well, yeah, they're at 36% on converting third down this year, which is 94th best in the nation out of 125 FBS teams. So yeah, that's not that's something that definitely needs to get cleaned up pretty quickly.
Yeah, and that's something that has plagued Kevin Wilson's offenses, you know, since he's been here. It was this inability to sustain drives. Now, everybody loves the, you know, the two-play drives with the 50-yard touchdown bomb, but, you know, it has been inconsistent. And to fix that consistency, if you could, you know, convert around 40 to 45%, although the numbers might, you know, you're talking about 5 to 9% better, but if you could get an extra couple first downs, take an extra few minutes off the clock, keep your defense off the field for a few minutes, and really wear down Michigan State's Michigan State's defense. And you could do that if Jordan Howard comes back, and he could get you 4, 5, 6 yards a carry and set you up for second and manageable and third and short and really move the chains. And you know, it's something that really goes back to, you know, 2011 was a wash. You know, I'm surprised they even converted a third down conversion with Dusty Keel and Ed Wright Baker. But, you know, this is something that, you know, you see on first down, just get 4 yards. On second down, get 3 yards instead of trying to go deep. If you could get 8 yards on first down, then on second down, maybe you try to go deep. But I use kind of too reliant on the big play. And I hate saying it because, you know, I love touchdowns and the offense needs touchdowns, but I sometimes wish that they would just get a first down. Just give me a couple first downs, march down the field and score some points.
Well, you make a good point. This is not exactly related to the first downs, but talking about Jordan Howard having an impact on Saturday, and I just brought that up, but Michigan State, you know, has done a really good job against the run for the most part this year. But one thing that I did note is that, and I need to go back and check this again, but they've only given up 100 yards to, or one player's only eclipsed the 100-yard mark against them this year, and it happened to be Markell Jones, who's just right up the road from Columbus East. He's at Purdue. So it'll be nice to have Howard, and he'll definitely have his hands full if he does get an opportunity to go against that defensive front that features quite a bit of talent.
Yeah, and that's where I think your thunder and lightning, although it's like two thunders and a lightning strike, you know, because if you could go three deep, you can give some of these guys a rest, and instead of being worn down by the defense, you guys or Indiana can now wear down defense. So it's really putting the shoe on the other foot. So hopefully Jordan Howard is back. I don't know. Nobody knows. They're not. It's going to be another game time decision. He dressed and had his ankles taped this week for warm ups, but we'll see. And you know, if he could go, even if he's not 100%, as long as he could cut and keep himself safe, I think they give him a shot, especially with the bye week coming up next week.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I'm really ready to see again what this offense can look like with all of its pieces. Obviously, last week was a good offensive performance, and you know they had some more good offensive performances before Howard went down with his injury. So, yeah, I'm definitely hopeful. I'm not entirely sure what else they can do on those third and shorts. You know, we talked some about maybe the occasional quarterback sneak, talked about maybe some occasional play action, but I just hope to see some creative play calling on third and short in order to, like you said, to sustain drives a little bit better. There's very few things as demoralizing as having a third and one or a third and two get stuffed for a minus two and have to punt and then send your defense back out of the field. So, yeah, I'm really hopeful Jordan Howard's able to give it a go. If he's not, that just means that the play calling has to get all the more creative. You guys alluded to the Lightning. That's another thing that I'm looking forward to see on Friday is, you know, Mike Majette, a week after kind of bursting onto the scene, how does he get used? And if Jordan Howard plays, obviously the number of opportunities for Majette are probably going to be a little bit less. If he doesn't play, you know, you'll probably look at a similar game plan to what they had against Rutgers. No reason to change the carry distribution necessarily. It was 15 for Redding, 11 for Majette. Majette also had three passes that he caught. I want to see him continue to be a part of the game plan, no matter, you know, whether Howard's healthy or not. It was really fun to watch him. He brings a different gear, accelerates very quickly, gets up to top speed very quickly. And I thought that he displayed some good vision as well. So that's not a key to the game or anything, but I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, another week of Mike Majette. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't continue to be a part of the offense.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about keys to the game here in a second. I'll go around and we'll each give our key to the game. But you're right, the carry distribution, you know, Redding's kind of fallen out of favor. He had a nice game against Rutgers, but, you know, he got shut down against Ohio State and he got shut down against Penn State. So maybe having Majette back there does give a different look, and having Howard back there as well would kind of put Redding back in the role where he thrived at the beginning of the year, was as that as that fill-in back who's good for 10 to 12 carries a game, who could get you 50 to 60 yards and can run between the tackles down at the goal line. All right, we'll get to keys to the game. TJ, what is your key to the game for IU?
Yeah, we've talked about quite a bit of this, but for me, I'm going to go with third downs. You know, 2 of 10 last week on third down for Indiana, plus the 1 of 4 on fourth down against Rutgers. Rutgers went 12 of 20 on third down, and they were 1 of 2 on fourth down, and that included multiple third down conversions in that fourth quarter that, you know, just crushing blows to have. Third and six, oh, that's an 8-yard gain. Third and eight, oh, that's a 10-yard gain. Third and four, or third and two, oh, that's a 40-yard touchdown run. You know, it's just, it was really crushing. And then they were 3 of 16 against Penn State, only 7 of 22 against Ohio State. And then, you know, like we mentioned, Michigan State converts third downs at a very good rate, and they do a pretty good job on defense of getting offenses off the field by shutting them down. It's not an elite defense. I think that Penn State is significantly better, probably not overall talent-wise, but I think Penn State a little bit better discipline, a little bit better schematically. But Michigan State, a very good defense that's going to be a test, but Indiana heading into that game is going to have much more of a full arsenal of weapons than they did against Penn State. So I'm just looking forward to seeing that battle on third down and seeing whether or not Indiana's been able to make any corrections this week to improve on both sides of the ball on third down.
Yeah, how about you, Nick? What's your key to the game?
Well, I mean, the first one's kind of a no-brainer, but, you know, winning the turnover battle is, I believe, of the utmost importance for this team for multiple reasons. One, just getting the opposing offense off the field. Two, you know, being on the road, you need to take the crowd out of the game. And I've been up to the Spartan Stadium. I know you've been up to Spartan Stadium, Sammy. They're a loud crowd. They're an excited crowd. They're behind their team 110%. I know that's really cliche, but it's true. They really buy into their football program for good reason. When you're playoff bound or playoff contenders, you're going to have that. But the games that IU has played their best in. They've won the turnover margin, aside from last week. But, you know, three turnovers in the second half are largely what cost them that game. So first things first is the turnover margin, you at least need to be equal by the end of the game. So that's number one for me. And then we just talked about this defense all night. It's good. It's not great. They're ranked 73rd of the nation in passing defense, giving up 231 yards per game, 7.4 yards per passing play, which is pretty bad when you look at the teams around them in that area of the ranking. So if IU can get their – we want to get the running game established, there's no doubt. But if we can get the passing game going, I mean, last week we had three wide receivers over 100 yards. I don't remember the last time that happened. I would assume it's probably when, like, Doss, maybe Belcher and Turner were on the team back in 2010 or 9, possibly, with Chapel at quarterback. I don't know that for certain. But reducing drops and getting the passing game going, I think, are pretty huge keys to this game because Michigan is susceptible through the air.
Yeah, and you're both correct. You know, those are three – or two keys to the game that I'll likely put in my keys to the game. You know, third downs, those are momentum-changing downs. You know, they're money downs, as coaches will say. And, Nick, that crowd at Michigan State, it's an electric atmosphere. They're right on top of you. It should be, if not sold out, a close to a sold-out crowd. It's a 3:30 game. It's an important game, so – you know, not dropping balls, converting on third downs. Don't give them a reason to cheer. So that's both of those are spot on. My key to the game kind of combines both of them. Take this crowd out of it early. I think it's a perfect opportunity for IU to go on the road. They leave all the negativity behind in Bloomington. You have to have the us against the world mentality. Only the guys in that room believe that they could win, that they're going to get six wins and go to a bowl game. And that's the attitude that they have to take the rest of the season. And it's a perfect time, instead of playing at home in front of 20,000 people who are just waiting for a reason to boo them off the field, you're going on the road, you take the mentality of, hey, it's these – however many, 75 guys on the trip, 50 guys on the trip, it's us. And that's all that matters. So it's us, the coaches, and the small amount of family and friends in the stands. It's us. This is what we're going to war with, and, you know, to hell with everybody else. So that's the mentality IU has to take into this. I think that's the key to the game for me, including your guys' two keys. I think if they do all of those things – and play angry football, they might come out and really shock everybody.
Yeah, I don't see anything's possible. Anything's possible.
I don't see any reason why not. I mean, yeah, last week was tough. Obviously, Penn State was not a great look, but like we said, everyone knows you're playing two men down. And then Ohio State, you were a play away from at least tying that game, if not winning that game. So, you know, the old saying, you know, you're three plays away from being 6-1, and I'm sure the reverse could be used. You're five plays away from being 1-6 at this point. But the big point is that this team's clearly talented. There's no issue there. It's going to be, first and foremost, just getting out of their own way, minimizing mistakes, minimizing inopportune time for penalties, minimizing turnovers, which weren't an issue until Rutgers, there's about a 10-minute span where the wheels came off. Don't shoot yourself in the foot, because this is as a talented team as Wilson's had, and any prior coach for that matter that I've seen in probably the last 15 years.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to have to be a perfect game in a sense. Yeah, you can make a few mistakes just because that's the nature of football. You're going to mess up one or two times. But, yeah, this is – look, the season's on a brink right now. And sorry to steal a corny IU basketball title there, but it's going over the edge. And people are, you know, we've all read the comments on the site. People are done, and they're fed up. And, you know, this win's not going to be a program-changing win. It's your fifth win. And we'll see where it goes from there. Guys, there are some good matchups in the Big Ten this week. I believe there are four or five other games. Let's touch upon those real quick. TJ, let's start with Ohio State at Rutgers. What do you see from the Buckeyes? You know, they're changing at quarterback. Is this kind of a trap game for them?
I don't think so. I really think it's high time for JT Barrett to take over as the starter. You know, I've seen a lot of Ohio State this season studying for this, for the Big Ten viewing guide and for the Big Ten recap, and just as a fan of college football, every time that JT Barrett comes in the game, their offense looks just crisper to me, looks to be operating a little bit higher tempo. This is not to criticize Cardale Jones. I think he's a very good player. I think that JT Barrett is a better fit for the Ohio State offense, especially with the amount of, well, they've got some injuries at wide receiver, and they also have some guys that just aren't quite clicking at wide receiver. I don't know if it's timing. I don't know if it's just a different role for them, but they've got some guys that just haven't clicked at wide receiver. It's certainly not a lack of talent. They got plenty of that there, but I think this team is at its best when they are running the football 75 to 80% of the time. And I think that having JT Barrett plus Ezekiel Elliott as that kind of running back, quarterback duo to run that zone read, run the inside zone plays, and then also JT Barrett's ability to beat you when things break down in the pocket, I really think that it's best for them. They are 3-touchdown favorites on the road at Rutgers, a team that we saw firsthand last week. Kudos to them for winning. They did what they could to take the game that IU, you know, somewhat handed to them and somewhat they took. I don't know the status of Leonte Carew, but if he doesn't play, Rutgers' best hope is to, just run the football with Martin and James and Hicks. But Ohio State's got a really good run defense. So I just think it's a poor matchup for Rutgers. I think Ohio State's going to roll. And I really think that they are going to hit their stride here with JT Barrett as quarterback now.
Yeah, it'll sure be an interesting dynamic. We'll see if Cardale, you know, one of the things Urban said today is that, you know, Cardale has to stay into it and stay engaged in the program in the game and can't get too down on himself. Next up, we're going to go ahead out to Lincoln, Nebraska. Northwestern, who's kind of hit the skids here. We'll see if they could rebound against the Nebraska team who's trying to find their footing and maybe get back into this Big Ten West race.
Yeah, Nebraska still has a chance, an outside chance, very outside chance in the West, just because they have not played the leaders, the Iowa Hawkeyes, yet. So they do still have a little bit of a chance. They're 3-4, 1-2 in the Big Ten. Northwestern 5-2. They've lost two in a row now. And the defense really has been hammered in back-to-back weeks. They give up 38 to Michigan, give up 40 to Iowa. Most of that coming to Iowa's backup tailback, Akram Wadley. So I'm not entirely sure what to expect of Northwestern. What I do think is becoming apparent, and I kind of saw this even when they started 5-0, was that their offense is just not capable right now of winning a game for them. It's got to be the defense that wins the game for the Wildcats. Clayton Thorson is just not ready to carry that team. If the defense has an off day, they have a pretty good running game. They have a very good running back, Justin Jackson, but Overall, the offense is really struggling at the moment. And they should be able to score some points against Nebraska, but run defense is actually something that Nebraska has been fairly decent at this season. And I kind of like the ability of Nebraska to run the ball with Terrell Newby, Imani Cross, Tommy Armstrong, if they integrate him into the running game. You know, the strength of Northwestern's defense is the secondary, and the strength of Nebraska's offense should be their running game and then using play action off of that. So games in Lincoln, you know, the intangibles would tell you it's time for Nebraska to actually get a home win over a team that, you know, is maybe considered their equal right now. So I'm looking forward to – this is the only noon Big Ten game, surprisingly. There are usually four or five on it at the same time at noon, but this is the only noon game, and I'll be watching it to see whether or not Northwestern can keep what looked like a very promising season together, or if it really completely falls apart.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the – it is weird that that's the only noon game. There are three 3:30 games and an 8 o'clock game, and that's the Rutgers-Ohio State game. TJ and Nick, the next game is another big game in the West. It's Wisconsin, who's 5-2, 2-1. Illinois is 4-2, 1-1. Illinois is hanging around there, 1-1. They're in third place right now in the West. This game is being played, I believe, it's at Illinois. It's their homecoming. They're wearing the gray ghost uniforms. Does Illinois have a chance at bringing this upset?
Go ahead, Nick.
You know, they only got beat by 9 points by Iowa, playing at home. I say why not. Now, obviously, you guys are a little bit more well-versed in every team in the Big Ten more than I am. Obviously, I spend most of my time studying all the numbers for IU's upcoming opponents, and we don't have Illinois on the schedule this year. But, yeah, I mean, they've looked strong in games now, okay in games. They barely slipped by Nebraska on a – what it takes, 6 attempts to score a touchdown. Is that right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's home. Wisconsin's been up and down throughout the season for the most part. I mean, why not?
Yeah, they're without Corey Clement running back. They're without Taewon Beal at running back. As a result, they ran for only 2.6 yards per carry against Purdue, 4.3 yards per carry against Nebraska, 2.5 yards per carry against Iowa. So this is not the type of Wisconsin team that anyone expected to see. The offense is being carried by Joel Stave, along with you know, a couple of short yardage plays by Alec Ingold, who really was not a running – similar to Mike Majette in terms of he came to Wisconsin at a totally different position. He was playing linebacker before, and they moved him to running back due to injuries, and he's been able to step up and get some short yardage touchdowns for them. But, you know, Stave has been mostly effective through the air. Their defense has been what's been really, really strong. If you look at the S&P Plus rankings, this is actually a battle of two top 25 teams. Wisconsin's 20th and Illinois is 24th. You know, S&P Plus is certainly not the Bible. Football Outsiders is not the Bible, but they are good tools to kind of reference things and put things into perspective and help you, you know, kind of contextualize what you see with your eyes. You know, I think that for Illinois, it's going to be about getting somebody besides Geronimo Allison into the action. He has been their number one target by far. If Wes Lunt can find a few other targets, besides just Allison, who I think the Wisconsin will game plan kind of away from being that effective. So if Illinois can do that and force a couple of mistakes from Stave, then I think they can pull off the upset. But Wisconsin, despite their flaws, I think finds a way to win.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting game and really interesting to see if Illinois pulls that off and makes it a race with Iowa in the Big Ten West there, what happens with Bill Cubitt. But
yeah,
that's another story for another day. Finally, the final game, there's only five Big Ten games. Penn State is playing Maryland. I believe the game is in Baltimore. You know, Penn State would love nothing better than to go and beat up on a bad Maryland team who came into Happy Valley, refused to shake hands, and you know, really sent a message to Penn State that, hey, we're here, this is a rivalry, and, you know, we're going to be, you know, four-year-olds about it and not shake your hand. So I think there's bad blood between James Franklin and Maryland, and I could see, you know, Penn State's a little frustrated after the loss against Ohio State, and they really take out their frustrations on Maryland and show them, hey, we're Penn State, and we're here to basically, you know, knock the snot out of you.
Yeah, the interesting thing about that, James Franklin, former coach in waiting at Maryland, he left to take the Vanderbilt job. You know, I don't know. I'm not the biggest James Franklin fan, and I know that some others have some major issues with his kind of in-game execution and his in-game time management and play management, but I think that Maryland would probably take that as opposed to be looking for another head coach here this coming off season, but plopping down some of that Under Armour money to find somebody. but Penn State, if people didn't see their game against Ohio State, I thought it was much closer than the 38-10 score would indicate. Penn State had some chances early on to stake themselves to a lead. They were unable to capitalize because their offense just isn't very good. But Saquon Barkley appears to be a special talent. I chose him preseason as my Big Ten freshman of the year, and I might have actually gotten something right. Maybe. We'll see. But he's looks awesome. He's averaging 8.3 yards a carry right now, and he torched Ohio State. I think it was the best rushing performance they've had put on them since Tevin Coleman. Nobody knows what to expect from Maryland. They're coming off of a bye week. They're going to be working with Mike Locksley as their head coach for now. He's not going to be getting that job. I think they might try to keep him on staff because I guess he does a decent job recruiting, and the players apparently like him, but he's already been a head coach, and it was a disaster. So I don't really think that Locksley is a candidate for that job, but you never know what's going to happen with kind of that first game under an interim head coach. The players certainly didn't appear to have that much love for Randy Edsall, so maybe they come out playing for Mike Locksley. We don't have a clue, but just on paper, I don't expect for Maryland to have much success on offense unless Perry Hills is able to run the ball really well as a quarterback. He did that against Ohio State, had over 100 yards rushing against Ohio State, but I think the Penn State defense plus Saquon Barkley is going to be enough, and who knows, maybe Christian Hackenberg will actually, you know, have a good game. I kind of doubt it, but I also kind of doubt that they need it.
Well, yeah. Speaking of you being spot on about Barkley, I can say I took a flyer on Hackenberg as my Big Ten offensive MVP, and so far, yeah.
Well, you know, I had several wrong as well, but we're gonna run something sometime soon, aren't we, to do like an update on how close or bad our predictions were?
Yeah,
we'll do something during the bye week.
Okay.
I don't know if we really want to see how bad we've done, but you know, we'll take a look back at our preseason picks, our busts, and our sleepers, and our all you know, our all Big Ten teams, just to see how we're doing. But
we all had Iowa. We all had Iowa, right? All had Iowa 7-0 undefeated, didn't we? Yeah.
Look at my preview
teams
from the summer.
They were in my Final Four.
I compared them to Hawkeye on the Avengers, so let's not go back to that.
Well, he might get his own movie, so.
It's true.
anyway, guys, TJ,
I know you got to run. It's bedtime, and it's also the it's Cubs time. So good luck to you. Nick, thanks for joining us as well. It's always great to have the two of you on with me. Enjoy the weekend and watch all the college games you can. Going too fast for me.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Have a good rest of the week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Go Hoosiers.
Yep, thanks for listening. Enjoy Back to the Future Day. Enjoy the various sports on TV tonight as well. We'll have all your coverage for the Indiana-Michigan State matchup, the battle for the brass spittoon. Keep checking us out. I know a lot of you have gone on social probation on reading about IU, but, you know, we'll get you through it, and hopefully you stick with us through the rest of the season. Thanks, as always, for listening. We appreciate your viewership, your loyalty, and keep commenting. Some of these comments are great. I love to see the passion. Keep commenting and, you know, just be nice to each other. Other than that, have a great night, and we'll speak to you on Monday, hopefully with the spittoon in hand. Well, a spittoon in hand. And see you then.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Oh, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.